We've made it to Thursday here on Wynn Tucson. I'm Kathleen Wynn, and you're listening to 10:30 a.m. The Voice. We just heard about the Super Bowl, and one of the downsides of bringing millions of people into your state and into a major event is the criminal activity that takes place in the shadows, in the background. This year, one of the cases of missing children, and I will share with you that Arizona's missing children numbers have doubled in the last year. So we've gone from just over 800 to over 1,600 missing children in Arizona. And that's a statistic that we is problematic on so many different levels. A lot of different contributing factors, from drugs to open borders to not enough police officers, transition in government. And so, but one particular story is a local story. It's a story we featured here, the story of Jessica Nunez and her daughter, Alicia Navarro. And just last week, Unsolved Mysteries, that has been around since 1987, when it was established by John Cosgrove and Terry Muir. They have won Emmys for their series, and are responsible for solving more than 260 cases. And as we like to say here, it's time to solve problems by speaking up and bringing solutions to everyday issues. And I'm grateful to welcome Terry Muir to our show this morning. Terry, thank you so much for joining us. Happy to have you here with Wynn Tucson.
Yeah, thank you so much, Kathleen, for having me. I'm happy to chat about this really important subject.
You have produced over 300 hours of primetime network television, pilots. You've worked with many different networks and stars. This has been like almost a life, it has been, not even like a lifelong mission for you. Would you say that, or why would you say that you've had an interest in this? You know, what inspired you to create Unsolved Mysteries? Because it's been a gift, honestly, when you think about that you've solved 260 mysteries. That's impressive.
You know, this goes back, I think, to my childhood. I was an avid Nancy Drew reader, but then as life marched on, I started doing documentaries, and I was doing some documentaries for HBO's America Undercover series. And one of them I did was about missing children. One of them I did was about missing adults. And that missing adults show actually solved a case, and everyone went, huh. So it was somebody who had set up his disappearance to leave his family, and he was found in New Jersey. So we started looking into this idea that maybe the public could help solve some of these cases, not just missing persons cases, but other cases. We produced three specials for NBC called Missing, Have You Seen This Person? And some of those children were found. And that led us to broaden out the concept of what is a mystery, and just to a whole variety of different kinds of mysteries. So murders, unexplained deaths, robberies, arson, so crime, but also paranormal, you know, UFOs and the ghosts and the big feet stories as well. So I feel really blessed to have taken this passion that I had as such a youngster, and kind of it's become my career. It's become my life. I've really been doing this now for 36 years, and I don't weary of it. I think it would be tough if cases didn't get solved, but that's what gives us, it's the hope that keeps us going. And that's the same situation with the Alicia Nunez case. We believe she's out there and alive. She just needs to get home.
Yes. And I just want to go back, because you did this without the benefit of social media. So when you started, if you started 36 years ago, you did not have the resources and the connections that we do via the internet. So what you did was almost, I would say it was even more exceptional if you go back in time to when you started doing this. Not that it's easier now, but we're more connected on the internet. And so I think it's almost more incredible that that's how you started.
No, No, it's really true. We didn't have, we had a clipping service. So a service would reach out to local newspapers and they would send us actual physical newspaper clippings of stories that that were mysteries in their area. And there were a lot of cold calls, not on cell phones because we didn't have cell phones or the internet. And when we started, law enforcement didn't know who we were and what we could do. So they were a little bit hesitant. But once everyone saw kind of the power of, yes, of the show, I think that then we started getting bags and bags of mail from people submitting stories and lots of calls from law enforcement as well. Can you help us with this case?
And I think that is the, if you will, the magic of this or the in solving the mystery. Alicia Navarro went missing in September of 2019. And her mom, Jessica Nunez, is a dear friend of mine. I was brought into the case. I, just so you don't know, but I have a nonprofit and we find missing children, not on television, but we work with law enforcement. We use technology. And so I was brought in after this was a cold case, a year into the case. And Jessica and I talk every day. I was so glad to see that you released the story. I know you produced it last fall with Trent Steele, who's one of the investigators. How, when you tell a story, what is the criteria you use to decide we're going to tell this story? And if you can, tell us why you're telling the story of Jessica Nunez and her daughter, Alicia Navarro.
Well, if it's a murder case or an unexplained death case, I think we're looking for twists and turns and multiple suspects, multiple theories. But we began Unsolved Mysteries began before Unsolved Mysteries was missing. Have you seen this person? So we started in the world of missing children and missing adults, and we've always done missing children's cases in all the episodes. And back in the day, there were really two categories of missing children stories. One was parental abductions, and those cases were much easier to solve. And then there were the stranger abductions, and those are much more difficult. In the Netflix series that we're doing now, in season one, we did a stranger abduction case, and then season two, we did parental abduction. So we want to keep looking for these children that need to be found. But in this day and age, now there's this whole new category of children that are going missing, and it's this human trafficking situation, which is absolutely frightening. I've raised three children. It's something I didn't have to worry about, but it's something that all parents have to worry about these days. So that's how we came to do the Jessica Nunez case. We wanted to shine a light on this human trafficking situation, and Jessica... Alicia is a cautionary tale to parents about how diligent you have to be to keep this from happening in this age of technology and all the communication that happens, phones, computers, everything. It's Alicia's story is frightening.
It's frightening.
It needs to be told.
It's frightening and it's heartbreaking. And when you are supporting the person that's left behind, the family that's left behind, we think that all this happens to the victim, but there's this incredible impact on the family. Terry, we have to take a short break, and when we come back, I want to kind of go into a little bit about how people can listen to the story that has local impact, and we'll come back and we'll discuss that. We're talking to Terry Muir of Unsolved Mysteries, and this is Kathleen Wynn with Wynn Tucson. You're listening to 10:30 a.m. The Voice, trusted local news and talk. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to Wynn Tucson. I'm your host, Kathleen Wynn, and our special guest today is Terry Muir. We're talking about unsolved mysteries, cases of murder, missing persons, fugitives, mysterious creatures, and the paranormal. Terry, this case in Arizona is being featured next week at an event, Night of Hope. There'll be about 3,000 people. And we've interviewed Jessica, but leading up to that, I thought it was so wonderful that last week in your season two, you launched this podcast about Jessica Nunez and her daughter, Alicia Navarro. And you've said some really important things today, which is that parents really need to know who their children are interacting with, because as we've gotten into the case of Alicia Navarro, we know that she basically was talking to adult men in her room every night after her parents would go to sleep. and interacting with them, and that she left, we believe, was someone that she had been communicating with online. And like you said, if it's a parent abduction, it narrows down who they're with. The mystery in this and the evil in this is that we don't know who took Alicia and where she is. And can you speak to that?
Right. Alicia took everything that could have helped investigators find her, track her. She took her computer. She took her cell phone. I believe those devices were turned off. So she was, I guess, what they call groomed. Somebody probably spent a lot of time working with her to get her to leave. One of the toughest things, you know, in my interview with Jessica, her mother, was that she left a note. Alicia left a note behind that made everyone feel, and I read the note too,
yes,
that she was coming back, that she intended to come back, and she was just going to be gone. You know, sorry, Mom. I mean, it was it was a big deal. Her 15th birthday was coming up, and she was planning on coming back, and somebody got her to leave the house and kept her from coming back. I think that the hope is, in this case, certainly, is that she is alive out there, and,
yes,
and we don't always feel that kind of hope in some of these cases, especially the stranger abductions. But the hope is that she's alive out there and just needs to get home.
Yeah, the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children has done an age progression, and I believe that you featured that in your podcast. And as I said, you spoke to Trent Steele, who has worked with technologists that we have here. The technologists are former law enforcement, former CIA, so they actually, which is exciting news, even though a phone is turned off, they can still access data from it, which is new. And so although they got the case two and a half years ago, but it's 3.5 years since she went missing, new data has come available. And so that's why your timing of releasing this is really very fortunate, not only for the Nunez family, but for the timing of the Super Bowl. We're going to have a lot of people here. If people, you every Wednesday you release podcasts, is that correct?
That's correct. We're in our second season, and we have a few more weeks to go of new podcasts.
And do people contact you after they listen to the podcast, maybe with tips? And what happens from the point where you release it, you've produced this, and people get in touch with you? What happens to those communications?
You know, at the end of each episode, we have a call to action where we suggest that people, if they have a tip, to call the local police department, they can also submit a tip to unsolved.com. So we will field tips. Most tips probably do go, in this case, for Alicia, it's the Glendale, Arizona Police Department. And then we also, in the call to action, we had a phone number for the Anti-Predator Project, which is Trent Steele. So there's lots of options for people to submit tips if they have ideas. And then sometimes they just reach out to Unsolved, to the website, and just make a comment about the story and the situation and, you know, heartfelt, you know, wishes to the family.
Yeah. You know, one of the things, every time there's a body found, a missing body, and Jessica calls me, when there's a body found, we just think, oh, unfortunate, someone died, something happened. But Jessica thinks, is this my daughter? And it's a different reality to live in. And I think the way in which you guys captured, I would call it a living hell that this mom lives in every day. And the way that you have treated this, how great would it be if we can bring Alicia home through the work that you've done here?
Oh my gosh, that would be amazing. But you know, we're just one piece of the effort to try and find her. Trent is doing amazing work. Oh, the media. I think the one thing that I've learned doing Unsolved Mysteries all these years is that you really, the way to get the cases solved is to keep it alive in the media. What you're doing, our podcast, everything you can do. When we do these podcasts, I always suggest to law enforcement, I say, you know, take this podcast and get it out there into your community, because it goes far and wide, but the, you know, chances are it's someone in the community that has the key or the clue to solving the case. So What you're doing is amazing. Listening to the intro today, the fact, the statistic that you've gone from 800 to 1,600 missing children is frightening. And we've got to put an end to this.
Well, and what I didn't mention, but we have 22 tribes in Arizona, and there's 5,000 missing Native women and children also. So over 6,000 missing people in Arizona that we know of. And so that is alarming. You're absolutely right. And this having the privilege of being in Jessica's life and supporting her and good days and bad. I think the thing that you pointed to that is the most critical is keeping this in the public eye. And because she has gotten the right people around her or the right opportunities have come, and she has been dogged about keeping her daughter's story out there. Many people have contacted her, contacted myself, contacted us together to say, can you help me with my child? I'm not getting the publicity you're getting. I'm not able to do, can you help me? And quite honestly, last year we found 10 missing children together, her and I, and out of talking to different people. The last one was in August, was a little girl that had been brought here from Mexico who was 8 years old, and we found her in El Mirage, Arizona. And I share that because she, while looking for her own daughter, has generously and courageously helped many other people. And I think that was the unintended outcome of this, but she wants her daughter back in the worst way, but wants to continue in this. And I think that the public gets intrigued by these stories, but they really have no understanding of the toll that it takes on a family. And if I can be cautionary with people, I think it's really important, and you've said it, we absolutely need to know who is contacting our children, how, because they will groom children. They will entice them to leave a perfectly safe home. Alicia was 14, naive. She was about to have her 15th birthday, big event. I agree with you. I think she had only planned on being gone a couple days and had no idea of what she was going to. And I'm hopeful that we do find her. What can we do to support your efforts, though, because you are telling us things that we need to know about everyday stories, everyday lives? How do people find Unsolved Mysteries? What's the best way to get in and support the efforts that you're doing?
Well, the podcast airs on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Audacity. So there's lots of places that people can find the podcast. Finding 10 people, 10 missing children is incredible. I mean, it seems like you're doing it. You are out there, and you are doing it. And I think that for Jessica, that the hope, every child that has been found gives her hope.
Yes.
And that's what probably keeps her going. I don't know. As a mother of three children, I can't imagine the situation that she's living through. It breaks my heart for her. So I think just supporting her, which is exactly what you're doing, and trying to find other missing children, which is exactly what you're doing. We've put the podcast out there, but I think you're doing incredible work.
Well, I thank you for that. And it takes everybody, though. You've said this. This is not, if we find, or when we find, I'm not going to say if, when we find Alicia, it will have been through thousands of hours of people looking, caring, researching, using technology. I'm constantly looking for what's the newest, latest, greatest technology to bring to the hands of our law enforcement. They really are the true heroes in this, as entrant, you know, private investigators. But when a child goes missing, and I get those calls, and the horror and the fear in a parent's voice, I know for you it's got to be the same way. When we do recover, when we do get a child back, there's no greater joy, and there's no greater relief that you have. And I want that for Jessica Nunez, and I want that for Alicia Navarro. So we have, I just want to thank you so much for giving us your time. You're super busy. I'm just so intrigued by the work that you do and so grateful that we could have you on. And if there's anything else you ever want to share, feel free to bring it back because we'd love to air it, Terry.
Well, thank you for having me and best of luck in your efforts. And we're all rooting for Alicia to come home.
Yes. Thanks. This has been Terry Moore with Muir with Unsolved Mysteries. We'll be back right after this. Kathleen Wynn, Wynn Tucson, 10:30 a.m., The Voice. Welcome back to Wynn Tucson. We are going to continue a little bit on this topic about missing children in Arizona. It is an epidemic. It is happening for so many different reasons. It's not just one source or one cause. When a border is open, coming in, it's also open going out. And so children are unfortunately disappearing. Matt, do we have that? Let's go ahead and play this. We just talked to Terry Muir of Unsolved Mysteries, and this was released last week, so I just wanted to let you know how it sounds if you go into their podcast.
She left the house under her own power to go meet somebody she'd been corresponding with online. That's the only thing we can say with absolute certainty. What happened when she got to where she was going to meet this person is the mystery.
It's Saturday, September 14th, 2019, and 42-year-old Jessica Nunez is settling in for a typical evening at home. Jessica lives with her husband and four children in Glendale, Arizona, a suburb just 9 miles northwest of downtown Phoenix.
I highly encourage you to listen to this story. It's a story I've been living for the last 3.5 years and in the last 2.5 years with mom. And I absolutely love this mom. She is a great mom. She looks to see what she could have done differently. She had put her daughter in a private high school. Her daughter had autism. She had gotten her extra counseling and coaching. This mom loved this. She was planning her daughter's 15th birthday and had done all these special things. So to have her daughter just literally disappear without a trace has been one of the hardest things. And it's taught me so much about what a family goes through with trauma and everything else. And so I've just doubled down my efforts in terms of a commitment to help families who are going through this. And gratefully, we have found children. That is the thing that keeps me going. But this case, every day, this family, I will never leave them until this gets resolved. I've asked Dave Smith, who's the new Pima County chair, but has a lifelong background in law enforcement, to join us today. So, Dave, welcome to Wynn Tucson. Good to have you here.
Well, it's great to be here. And again, this is something, you know, you and I have talked about a lot. And one of the things that I think I don't quite understand why this has become a partisan issue, because this is something everybody should be very concerned about and always has been. It's, I think your listeners need to understand, for law enforcement, the missing person is a very difficult issue. You have the runaways, you don't know who or why someone's missing. And unless they're, you know, young, it's really hard to even get focused, you know, at first, because, you know, we frankly have people missing every day. So this is a very difficult topic. It's very frustrating. And I just wish both parties would focus on this and help try to solve these problems.
If I've said it once, I've said it a million times. The predators don't give a damn how you vote. They don't care if you're an independent. No. They don't care if you're Republican. They don't care if you're a Democrat. What they do care about is getting access to your kid and then for their purposes. And if it's a 14-year-old or a 15-year-old and a 25-year-old, 35-year-old, 45-year-old, the 25, 35, 45-year-old will always win in an intellectual battle. And if you're really good at manipulation and conning people into doing things, these kids aren't, they're not equipped. And so the statistic that has me concerned is the number of increase in kids in foster care. That's an intersection to this. Not all kids that go missing are in foster care. But we do have some parental abductions, so we do have some family members that take kids. And then there's just the, we don't know. And you mentioned runaways. And unfortunately, teenage girls are dramatic. They will run away for attention, but those get solved fairly quickly. It's when one of those cases gets confused with one of these cases, which is clearly this was an abduction, but it wasn't treated as such in the beginning. So I believe, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, Dave, the very first hours when someone goes missing and police take on the case are really critical time to determine the trajectory of the case.
You know, all criminality is very temporal. If you get closer to the crime you can get involved for law enforcement, obviously the better it is. We all know that. And like you're saying, is there are so many elements of factors to it. And this is one of the problems we have today. We are literally, you know, a society that's ignoring broken windows all around us in terms of criminality. All you got to do is just watch, drive through Tucson any day and notice how little traffic control there is, you know. And this is, you know, these kind of minor, you know, events, you know, the guy running the stoplight, there's all these things. You know, these are all indicative of a social problem. And the missing children in this day and age is such a crisis, you know. And you talk about the open border issue, the fact that we say, well, if you're a family and you come across the world, well, then we hear they're selling children to these people, these smugglers, so they can show or pretend to be a family. Well, this just exacerbates the problem. And if they're selling children, do they care what kind of children? Do they care where the children come from? No. And, you know, you and I, we knew with the Super Bowl coming, there was going to be issues in Arizona. We talked about this. We tried to get grants. You did get grants for people to deal with the human smuggling issues. And yet, I don't think the average person realizes how big a problem is, how much work's going into it, and still not making a difference. Because you've got to have the whole society involved. You can't have administrations like we have now that ignore day-to-day criminality, because this is part of that day-to-day criminality. It's a tough issue, gang. And those of you listening, become activists about this. Demand action. And this is one of the problems. As Republicans, we tend to say, well, I'm going to have my coffee and listen to the radio in the morning. I want you to pick up the phone and take action, folks, because we need to become activists, each of us, to change this world that's going like it is. You know, this is why your voice is so important. Every day, you're reminding people of all these critical issues that are so important.
Well, thank you for that. And one of the issues that causes, you know, I always look at cause and effect, right? Why do we have this? If, you know, what causes that? And as you know, we've had a systematic attack on our law enforcement. So recruitment is down, not just in Arizona, not just in Tucson, but across the country. And so finding good, qualified people that should be in law enforcement, and we look at what just happened with Tyree and know that the people that were hired by, I think it was Memphis Police Department, probably didn't have the credentials and didn't have the moral character to be doing the job. And so it's on full display for the country. And then people get their political tentacles into this, and we lose sight of the fact that we need good, qualified officers. And instead, we've whipped it into a political frenzy. And unfortunately, there's a young man who was murdered.
Yep, beaten to death.
Beaten to death.
And let me
go
just,
ahead,
let
please
me just
go ahead.
Accelerate your point, because you're dead on. And this is a very hot topic for me. I've been writing on it and talking about this because, you know, my whole adult life was spent in law enforcement training, consulting, writing. Nothing those five men did that night is law enforcement oriented. It's all gangster activity. There's no police tactics involved. And then you start examining Memphis PD, and you're talking about lowering standards. Let's tell you where the key to lowering standards is most deadly: from the chief position down. Mm. And you see a chief here, she failed up her whole career. There is, in normal times, nobody with her resume could have even been hired as a captain in a small agency. She got fired for interfering in an investigation very early in her management career, from Atlanta, and she gets rehired, and then she just continues to go up in spite of this kind of problem where she forms these units, these special enforcement teams, which require very intense supervision. Any police leader, you ask any TPD, the sheriff's department here, anybody who has been in a command position, how important it is to have strong supervisors and special units, because they build their own culture. This Scorpion unit, and that's a bad name for any unit.
Right.
In a day and age, we know this is ridiculous. But just think about it, folks. You have this elite, quote, unquote, unit of people who are poorly trained, poorly supervised, and they were not screened when they were hired. They didn't go through the normal hiring process because half the agencies in the United States, because of this drive for, quote, equity, have reduced their standards. You know, I don't want a doctor with reduced standards, and I sure as heck don't want a cop with reduced standards. I know how hard it is to create a good law enforcement officer, to recruit, train, develop, and supervise. And yet here we see these agencies are just wholesale reducing their standards. So it's a very hot topic with me. And here again, we've got to demand the best from our law enforcement, but also from our political leaders who are appointing these people. And these chiefs have to be the first priority for a good chief. Tucson knows more than anything how a bad chief can run an agency down. Look at
and we
CPD.
Have a good chief. We have a good chief.
When I was here,
we have a good chief now. I believe we
now
have.
We
a,
do. Thank God we do.
Yeah.
Isn't that was the thing. You know, but no one likes to be the example of bad leadership under the prior chief. And you saw that the people retire, you know, and here's the thing. I'm on several in my Facebook groups with retired law enforcement officers. I was TPD, you know, 48 years ago, you know, God, oh boy, was that. Anyway, a long time ago, we had Tucson.
The earth had just cooled, Dave, right? The dinosaurs had just died off. Go ahead. I'm teasing.
I know. My knees started hurting just saying that, you know. But this is the thing. That was, TPD was an outstanding agency.
Yes, it was.
One of the top in the country. Young, intelligent, educated, dynamic. We had all these programs. You know, we had community policing, and that was in 75. And, you know, it's just so sad because this progressive leadership that they brought in just destroyed that culture. And now we're getting it back because, you know, ultimately the people who become law enforcement officers do care and they have a high value base. And I think the public, I don't care what party you are. I don't care if you're a Democrat, an independent, a libertarian or a Republican. You want law and order, and you want the best to protect you and your family. And that's what, you know, you're an advocate for this as well, I know.
Yeah.
And this is the thing that's so important. We've got to constantly put pressure on our political leaders not to lower that standard. And, you know, it's so funny. The Democrats used to be pro-law enforcement. They used to be pro-law and order. Biden was one of the big pushers for the crime bill in 1994. So we know this is completely flipped for some reason. I don't understand it.
Dave, we're going to come back right after this. We'll pick it up where we left off. I think it's important to see the erosion, if you will, and we'll address it. I'm talking to Dave Smith, former retired law enforcement professional. He still works in that field, and he's taken over Pima County GOP, so we're going to bring law and order across the board. Kathleen Wynn, Wynn Tucson, you're listening to 1030 AM The Voice. We'll be back after these messages. Welcome back to Wynn Tucson. I'm Kathleen Wynn. We're talking to Dave Smith. He's my very special guest today. And Dave, you know, we talked back in the day, and when I first got out of college, television reporter, met a cop, married a cop, well, dated a cop, married a cop, had cop kids, divorced a cop, which unfortunately is another side benefit of it's hard. It's hard work. And but I never, ever, and life went on, and my first husband unfortunately passed away 4 years ago, coming back from the police memorial from D.C. He was killed after he was hit in an accident on his motorcycle, and several hours later he succumbed to his injuries. And but when he was on the department, and when I was in that role for 7 years, Tucson Police Department was an exceptional department. There was a pride. He was undercover. He did canines. He ended his career as a motors cop. And But there was a lot of pride in being a cop, and we didn't have the culture that we have now of just outright hatred. And I look at the number of deaths, and so that's the other thing. If you're recruiting somebody for a job and those people are being targeted because we've given permission to people to target them, we've had such a shift since the time that you served, since the time I was a part of this, to now. And I don't know how you go back and restore. You can't. But how do we go forward and bring that respect and that interest in doing what I think is one of the most honorable jobs? It's definitely a necessary job. How do we protect our communities from this scourge of hatred and crime?
You know, it's funny that we law enforcement used to be such a, you know, it was every kid wanted to be a cop. You had all the TV shows that adorated law enforcement. But you started seeing this as the criminal justice system began to change its emphasis from protecting the victim to worrying about the criminal. And that's really been the whole emphasis. We had this cultural shift. It started in the 90s, this restorative justice concept. Our justice system punishes, and that's unfortunately the nature of mankind. Criminal behavior is a choice. That's my belief. It's not because of the capitalist system that, you know, and again, what you hear is it's either the racist system, the capitalist system, the patriarchy, whatever. Well, that was a theory that was presented to me in 1973 at the U of A in my criminology class, and I didn't agree with it then. And after being a cop about an hour and a half on the Tucson streets, I went right back to the classical theory, absolutely, that crime is a choice. Now what happens is when you change your criminal justice system from focusing on the victim to the criminal, now you start making excuses for the criminal. You start doing all these things. And by the crime bill that the Democrats supported, the Black Caucus supported in the 90s, lowered the crime rate in this country to record lows. It was successful, but it filled the prisons. And that was the problem. You had over a million people incarcerated in the United States because criminality had become a real problem. And it stopped being a problem because we put criminality, you cure criminality by aging it, just like wine. You put it in prison and let it age, and about 45 years of age, criminality decreases dramatically. So what was happening in the United States, we had all these people in prison. Well, immediately Obama started letting, if you remember, he would say, well, okay, drugs aren't a real crime. Let's have all the drugs, even though the drug dealers had multiple offenses in the past. They were in there because they committed a drug crime when they had a whole criminal background, and you got them out of the streets.
Yeah, theft.
And exactly. Oh, sure, theft, robbery, all those things. And yet what happens is, they went to prison because they finally got caught on this, and then the prosecutor chose to pick the best crime or get them to cop to it or whatever they did. Now, all of a sudden, you started seeing this huge trend because of this, you know, reshaping America, you know, and then, boy, it just accelerated. Then the focus no longer was even on criminality. It was suddenly on the police. It was our fault. It's almost like, you know what creates crime? Cops. Cops cause crime. You know, that's like saying, poaching is caused by hunting laws. That's it, because if you didn't have laws, it wouldn't be no such thing as poaching. And it's just, even though you and I
it's like child pornography is caused because we have kids that are being permissive or hypersexualized. It's ridiculous. I'm talking to Dave Smith, retired law enforcement professional, and we're talking about abduction, crime trends, policing. And so, Dave, just in the news in the last few days, by executive order, the governor of the state has suspended the death penalty. And, you know, we could do a whole show on that. However, I do remember when I was working at the Attorney General's office that there was a problem in getting the drugs for lethal injections, and that the companies making those drugs didn't want to provide them. And while Tom Horn was the Attorney General, there was a death by lethal injection that didn't go well. Like it took much longer than it should. So then there was an outcry. It was inhumane. But what do we do? I mean, because now, can you do that? Can she just arbitrarily change a law? Will law enforcement get involved? Is there a commitment to the death penalty? Because in order to get that, you have to do something really heinous. And if, and to your point, if we continue to take away the punishment, and we are, people are stealing, going in stores and stealing, shoplifting. No one's stopping that. So we are starting to actually allow crime. We clearly are allowing kids to stay missing, drugs. What do we do? Is it a lack of resources? Is it a lack of will? How do we fix this?
Man, I tell you, you ought to run for office. You ought to get this down. I'm just telling you. Here's the thing. You're exactly right. You are exactly right. We are in trouble. Number one, the Republican Party, we need to get candidates that are law and order candidates, which our platform is law and order. Let's get a sheriff's candidate. Let's get a prosecutor. You people listening out there, start recruiting us people to run for these offices. We can't have a George Soros prosecutor in Pima County because we're descending into chaos. These are the people that believe, like you're saying, Katie Hobbs, she believes the law is under authority. Now, the United States is structured in a way the law is under the Constitution, under the law itself, and then authority is under both. Authority has to obey both the law and the Constitution, and everything subordinate to the Constitution. The problem is that the authoritarian nature of the left has become that they just automatically decide what laws they'll enforce. Now, that's malfeasance or nonfeasance, whatever you want to call it. But that has become the norm in this country. Presidents that create executive fiats, literally authoritarian style, Mussolini style, under Obama really got into it full swing. He even had the upturned chin thing going. And the problem I have is when you see a governor like Katie Hobbs say she won't even tell you her personal beliefs. You know, you saw that.
Yes.
She refused to say what she believes, and yet here she goes and says, well, I'm not going to enforce that law. You know what? Frankly, it's part of this what appears to be a cult of death among the left, where human life is just devalued, because what the death penalty says, and where people say, well, if you believe in life, why are you for the death penalty? Because I believe if you're an adult human being and you plot to take a life from another,
yes,
I'll take a transaction with you that I'll take your life from you. Now, with due process of law. But what it does, it puts all the chips on the table. You are risking your own existence if you choose to murder another human being. Now, that makes that other human being's life at least equitable in that human calculus. And again, if you believe in classical criminality, crime is a rational choice.
Yes.
Now, even you say, well, he's insane. Well, that's why we build insanity laws in. If they're insane, then we say you can prove it, then you're an exception and you aren't going to be punished.
But you may spend the rest of your life in jail. Dave, we've got about 30 seconds. I just want to thank you for your input. We will have you on many times because not only do we have these issues, but we've got party issues, and you're the perfect person to lead us at this time. And I appreciate your time this morning. We'll have you back. Stay safe. Keep up the good work, and you've been listening to Dave Smith, Chair of Pima County GOP. I'm Kathleen Wynn. This is Wynn Tucson. We'll be back tomorrow with Tom Horn and Joseph Chaplick. This has been 10:30 a.m. The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Go make it a great day.